from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the 12th day of January 2018. It's USDA Report Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll review this morning's report and the impact it had on the commodity markets in Chicago with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll hear a discussion I had with Scott Irwin before the end of the year about his long-term look at pricing and futures. You'll be interested, especially after today's report, in what he had to say and how he views the marketplace. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast, too, that with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. Oh, and it's Commodity Week Day. If you can stay with us for the whole half hour, we'll have a live edition of the program. Otherwise, you'll hear it on many of these radio stations over the weekend, or you can find it online later this afternoon at WILLAG.org. Our guests this week include Jerry Goodell from Price Futures Group out of Chicago, Sherman Newland, he's from Hudsonville, Illinois, and Risk Management Commodities, and Jim McCormick of Allendale from McHenry, Illinois. It all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Ag Programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media this morning. The United States Department of Agriculture released several reports, and this is how it finished up, impacting the marketplace, at least the numbers, as they now are being ingested into the marketplace. Harvested acres for corn at 82.7 million. Yield was changed, upped to 176.6 bushels to the acre for a total production of 14.604 billion bushels, a carryout now of 2.477 billion, and a 325 midpoint for the cash price. On the soybeans, yield lowered to 49.1 bushels to the acre on 89.5 million harvested acres for a total production of 4.392 million, and the carryout re-increased to 470 million, and the midpoint there at $9.30. Joining us to take up these numbers and the impact they had in the marketplace is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Great to be back with you, Todd.
Okay, so let's start and talk about some of these numbers. Which change do you want to begin with?
Well, I guess kind of following up with what we talked about last week maybe is, you know, the grains have had this foot and stuck in 2017 because of the big supply, slow demand mindset, and also I think the fears in the trade of lost U.S. demand because of TPP and a stronger dollar and NAFTA. And while we've got the dollar down at now January 15, 2015 lows, the Chinese currency's at December of 2015 lows, and the gold, as you talked about, was sharply higher today at 2017 highs, you've got a situation where the outside markets are moving forward into 2018. I don't think USDA's report did anything to help us move into 2018 and get rid of those old cobwebs from 2017 of big supplies and small demand.
Yeah, so in fact, when you look at the ending stocks for 17-18, corn ending stocks were up 40 million bushels, soybeans up 25, even the wheat ending stocks increased by 29 million bushels. So stocks continue to build. USDA saying that here in the state of Illinois, we had a record crop. I think our old yield was 200 bushels the acre statewide, and now we're at 201. All these things just backing out of the grain stocks numbers, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think if it had not been for the yield increase, I think the corn would have gotten by far the best report again this month, and the beans would have gotten the worst report again this month, like December, because the USDA kept exports and corn unchanged. They lowered feed and residual, which I think you can find a lot of skepticism around the trade about that number. And with that yield increase, we also saw the lower harvested acres. So it really didn't hurt us in terms of pushing a lot of production increases into the numbers in the corn. But I think, again, the final issue with the corn is the wheat, and the planted acres for winter wheat came in about 1.3 million more than the trade was expecting. We didn't see any real cuts at all in Argentina or Australia. or other countries in wheat that we could have seen cuts for, and I think we should have seen cuts for. And so wheat was the leader to the downside again, and that's probably the biggest issue that we resume this 2017 mindset. Now, having said that, Todd, I think that today's close in beans, with as bad as the report looked to me, because we had 2 months in a row of lower exports, we're now looking at a stocks-to-use ratio of 11% here in this country at a 470 carryover. Just 2 months ago, we were at 425 and a 9.8% stocks-to-use ratio. So the question could be asked, well, why in the world then did beans rally? And I think it really goes back to the weather in Argentina. It's not nearly as good for the crop as what the trade was thinking probably back on Monday, Tuesday. And we've been trying to dial it in, but fears of this report have held that back. I think Tuesday could be quite a volatile day if the weekend rains are disappointing in the Pampas and Buenos Aires and Entre Rios areas. I think the beans and the corn could end up taking this market higher, just to be able to factor in that USDA's most recent numbers just given today are probably too big already at this stage of the game. So this is where it would be nice to have had a better report for the wheat so that we could trade more weather. But because the wheat acreage numbers were probably dampened a little bit, since we've got less threat of the drought here in the United States, and the slower demand and exports for wheat probably hurt even more because USDA piled on more acres.
Now, I'm wondering on the rally in the bean market, part of that due because USDA's number was right on where the trade expected it to be. I think the trade was at 472, and the number for the carryout for soybeans at 470 million bushels. That was an increase, but at least the trade was expecting it. And then it's a long holiday weekend. Was there some evening up that managed to push the market a bit higher too?
Yeah, I think that we did see the situation develop where the wheat lost 10 cents to the corn. The wheat corn spread fell back to below 75 cents. Now, we did find support, though, on the technicals in terms of holding. We stayed above 420 in soft red wheat. We stayed above 345 in March corn. And we stayed above 935 and even got back above 940 as January beans expired today. These are going to be big numbers, I think, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, especially with the January contract now off the board. So if we could come back with a dry weather event and we look at this dollar that has just been falling, and then we've gotten new news out of NAFTA that maybe President Trump is looking to extend it because of the Mexican elections. I think it's also because of the political environment in Washington. I think he's got to hug his base at this point. Those are good pieces of information, good fundamental factors that maybe this trade will start to work more into a 2018 more friendly commodity demand, more tighter supply mindset that we continue to lag from in these grain markets.
Anything from the livestock side of the ledger we should take up for the day?
Yeah, I'd say really briefly, I think the fat cattle coming in around 118 to 120 on the cash market trade, and more cold, harsh weather coming into the feedlots. We've probably got enough discount in the futures markets and the fats. And I would even say in the March feeders, we probably have enough discount. I am still nervous about the hogs. We saw a big break in the hogs yesterday when Mexico said they'd walk away from NAFTA if we ended up signing the termination papers. I don't think we factored hardly any of the negativity price-wise into a lost NAFTA deal when it comes to the pork side of the equation.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us for the day.
Thank you, as always, for having me, sir.
That's Mike Zuzel of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives and the National Grain and Feed Association have issued a joint statement as it relates to the Section 199A tax provisions that were updated in the recently passed tax legislation out of Washington, D.C. The legislation, as written, would give a large incentive to farmers to market their grain through grain cooperatives. The two organizations say we are aware of questions and concerns raised about the potential marketplace effects of the new 199A of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act as it relates to producers and agribusinesses. Congress's intent, it goes on, in including this provision was to replicate the tax treatment previously available to co-op farmer members, consistent with the bill's overarching goal of creating jobs and economic growth, including in rural America. and we are working intensively with stakeholders, including cooperatives, non-cooperative-owned agribusinesses, and Senate offices, including Senators Hoeven, Thune, and Roberts. The goal of these discussions is to arrive at an equitable solution that preserves the benefits that cooperatives and their farmer patrons previously enjoyed under Section 199 of the tax code, while addressing any unforeseen impacts on producers' marketing decisions. UNCFC, NGFA, and their stakeholders say they are committed to reaching a solution in a thoughtful and expeditious manner and to working with Congress, which will have to address the issue promptly. And this one other news item for the day, be it a threat or intention, if President Donald Trump starts the withdrawal process from the North American Free Trade Agreement, Mexico will drop the trade pact. If Trump decides to leave NAFTA, he would trigger a six-month process to withdraw from the agreement. An official from Mexico said this week that if the president announces a U.S. withdrawal from NAFTA, at that moment the negotiations stop. Ag Canada reports that Mexico remains firm on its position to get up and leave from the negotiating table if Mr. Trump goes through with the move. While a NAFTA termination letter would start the six-month exit clock ticking, the U.S. would not be legally bound to quit NAFTA once it expires. Washington could use the move as leverage over Canada and Mexico in talks to update the 24-year-old trade pact. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, the agricultural economists here at Illinois have been championing a new era for grain prices since the rise of ethanol as a major player in the U.S. corn market. You probably already know that. It's the third such era that you may not know. I asked University of Illinois agricultural economist Scott Irwin how he defines these and why grain prices find stability within the range around the new era midpoints.
Well, the answer to the first part is easy. The second part, not so much. The periods that I call eras of grain prices run from post-World War II to 1973, and then from 73 to 2006, and 2006 to the present. And what we have found to date is that grain prices, unadjusted for inflation, tend to move in a range during these eras. And if you're at high prices in the range, you'll tend to revert back to the average. And if you're at low prices, you'll tend to slowly at some point crawl back up towards the average. And that seems to be the pattern. Now, why do we apparently move in such reasonably defined ranges over so many decades until there's a big jump in the average price? No real good answers for that. My own personal view is it just reflects a relatively stable supply and demand dynamics. You're talking about generally food commodity markets. They don't change that rapidly. Who's producing them? Who's consuming them? So as long as economic growth is not, you know, wildly high or low, will tend to bounce around in a range.
Can you describe the current era and when you think it began and what the price looks like?
You know, we don't have the benefit of 30 or 35 years of hindsight like we, you know, had looking back from 73 to 2006. But it's pretty clear that a new era started in 2006, and we saw a major jump in the average price level. To date, here in Illinois, corn prices, for example, have averaged about $4.50 since 2006. Now, of course, the last 4 years, prices have been much lower on average, probably something like $3.50. I'm not sure exactly what that average would be for the last 4 years in Illinois, but that'd probably be pretty close. And prices have ranged from roughly $3 to $8 a bushel. And that's our current situation. And the big argument is, should we look at prices going forward, say the next 5 years? They're low now. And should we therefore forecast a continuation of prices in the low $3 range? Or should we believe that corn and soybean prices are mean reverting and they'll revert back up towards some higher average price than, say, $3 to $3.50? And so that's where the debate really is occurring.
What's the answer to that then? Should farmers be less aggressive marketing at these prices?
Well, it all depends on your belief. If you believe conventional wisdom, you should prepare and project low $3, sub $3.50 corn prices, basically as far as the eye can see. That is not my view. I will be the first to admit that prices have gone lower longer than I expected when we came off the highs, but I still believe that a projection of an average price for the next 5 years closer to $4 than $3.25 or $3.50 is more realistic. And so what this fundamentally means to me in terms of thinking about marketing strategies is I believe that corn and soybean prices do revert to a long run average until another era forms. And that means when we're at low prices, like we are now, I expect that we will eventually revert back up to the mean. So that's the good news. The bad news is I don't have much confidence in my ability to exactly time when that's going to occur. That will require prediction, especially of weather problems.
So given all that, Scott, what's your prediction for prices over the next, say, 5 years and the impact on land prices?
Excellent question. For corn, I would use a U.S. average price of $4. For soybeans, $10.75. And for all wheat, $4.75. Something in around those levels is where I think we will end up averaging. Land prices are really interesting. It appears that the people at the margin that are bidding on and determining land values believe my contrarian position on prices. That's at least one way to reconcile the firmness of land values, is that these long-run investors, whether they be farmers or outside investors, are counting on some reversion to averages like that that will restore profitability.
Finally, then, if prices are down at the bottom of the trading range, what then will it take to move prices higher?
Well, I think it will be two things. One that will be slow and one that will be a little bit more violent. The slow factor will be a return to better rates of economic growth around the world and in the U.S. that will largely feed through livestock demand into feed grain and oilseed prices. But the big one, in my opinion, will be a return to a more normal frequency of bad weather in the United States. That makes me sound really doom and gloom, but we've just come off of the best 20 plus year period since 1895 in terms of U.S. Corn Belt weather. And over the next 5-10 years, history says that you wouldn't want to project that we would have such good weather again. And I think it'll be a series in a fairly short period of time of some really poor weather. That'll be the big event that pulls us out.
Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist from the University of Illinois. He and his colleagues believe we remain in a higher plateau grain price era. It began when Congress mandated in 2005 that renewable fuels be ramped up in the U.S. gasoline supply over a 10-year period. This is the Closing Market Report. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible to check the weather forecast. What a wide swing in temperatures we've had and conditions as well. Eric, what can you tell us about the last 24 hours and then going forward?
Yeah, that is for sure. And as that cold air sank in, you know, all the rain that we got across the eastern Corn Belt in the last 24 hours, it's all frozen. And it's been an interesting day. In fact, I'm right now in central Wisconsin. And where I am, we have had a 40-degree temperature change in the last 24 hours. So a pretty strong Arctic front has come through, and it's the first of kind of two pulses of cold air that we're going to see. So the first one's now, we're going to get a second one coming in early next week. And both of them are going to stick around for about a week. We are potentially seeing a bit of a warm up, maybe around the 18th, 19th, 20th, but it's going to be brief. I don't see anything kind of hanging on too long. Now, what's been interesting about this weather system is where it went. Okay. So it began life kind of as two separate systems, but they came together right around kind of the north-south stretch of the Mississippi River. Now, what's important about that is that most of the precipitation from these last two events have been in the eastern half of the country. And why I bring that up is because we just got a brand new drought monitor update that just came out on Thursday, and it confirmed a lot of what we've been observing with the precipitation patterns, and that is our central states, you know, the Oklahoma, northern Texas, and parts of Kansas, where we grow a lot of wheat, not only didn't get much precipitation out of this, but they have not gotten much in about the last 90 days. So I'm getting concerned. I want everybody that's listening just to let me be concerned about it, because if we kind of continue to develop drought in that area throughout the rest of our winter as we get into spring, well, if it hangs on through May, that could be a pretty good indicator that we might see some stresses in the 2018 growing season. So I just want everybody to know I'm watching it closely, and let me continue to watch it throughout the rest of this winter and early spring.
Hey, there's a new European long-range model out, I'm told. What does it tell us about our spring and maybe South America?
Looks as though the rest of January and February will continue to kind of keep us in the similar pattern that we have been in. But some of the longer range projections do look as though March and April, this is from one model, from the European model, do look as though March and April might carry with it a slight warm bias for a big section of the Corn Belt. Now, again, this is a long range forecast from one model, but at least is a first indicator, a first clue for that. At the same time, we'll be transitioning out of our weak La Nina toward what we call ENSO neutral conditions. And when you kind of blend all that together and look at that and several other factors, I'm tending to buy the forecast that we might see some warmer conditions for our spring. And that's important, because I know a lot of guys around here in central Illinois like to do those really early beans on some small land. But, you know, the bigger factor here is what these models have said about South America. And they've kind of confirmed a forecast trend. And that forecast trend is kind of a split pattern across South America. And here it is. The northern growing regions, so think Mato Grosso, Goiás, the Tocantins, the longer range forecast all the way through April continue to pick up on a dry bias. Now, what does that impact? That impacts the safrinha crop, not the first crop, not the soybeans. It impacts the second crop, which is corn. The other thing it's picking up on is a continuation of some drier conditions in Argentina, which has been battling dry conditions for a while. So we're kind of seeing some pretty consistent behavior in the longer-term models. Now, again, though, they're longer-term, which means we still have to watch day-to-day what we're expecting in terms of precipitation on South America. But if you ask me, while it's not going to put a lot of pressure on the bean crop, because the bean crop was the first crop and it looks pretty darn good, it might put some pressure on that second crop, the safrinha crop, which would be a lot of it would be corn. So that's the big news coming out of the European model in the last couple of days.